There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Everybody, and happy to have you with us here from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where we will be all week. So much going on. I'm Wendy Nix with Adam Schefter, Lewis Riddick, Todd McShay, and Mike Tannenbaum. Just to catch you up right now, here is what's happening today in Indianapolis. It will be a very busy week. At 5 o'clock Eastern, though, owners are expected to meet players to talk about the new CBA, which could expand the playoffs and move into a 17-game regular season. We've got 47 NFL head coaches and GMs that will be talking today. You'll also hear from SEC standouts Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, who also addressed the media earlier today. Joe Burrow put on an absolute show, as you know, en route to a national championship for LSU, setting an FBS single season record with 60 touchdown passes, and did so while completing a whopping 76% of his passes. And not only that, but Burrow won the Heisman Trophy in dominant fashion, receiving a record 90.7% of the first place votes. Here are previous comments from Joe Burrow on February 17th during a reception for the Davey O'Brien Award. He had this to say, "I do have leverage. The Bengals have their process and I have my process. We haven't even gotten to the combine yet. There's a lot of things that happen leading up to the draft and a lot of information gathered." Burrow's mother, Robin, shot down the idea her son does not want to play for the Bengals, saying, "We have no idea where that came from. It's a story out there that someone has created that doesn't have any substance, at least from our perspective." Here is Burrow earlier today here at the Combine.
"Of course I want to be the first pick. You know, that's every kid's dream. You know, I've worked really, really hard for this opportunity, and I'm blessed to be in this position. And I'm a ball player. Whoever picks me, I'm going to go show up. I'll play whoever for whoever drafts me. You know, I'm just not going to be presumptuous about, you know, what they want to do. It's the draft. You guys have been covering it for a long time. You never know what's going to happen." "So we played a month longer than everyone else, and everyone else has been training a month longer than us. You know, I didn't think I'd be able to put my best foot forward here at the combine, so I wanted to wait until pro day, had another whole month of training, and just be the best that I could be when everyone's eyes are on me. You know, coming in, if you're the number one pick, the team that's picking number one is there for a reason. So you're gonna have to come in. There's gonna be ups and downs, and you just gotta stay steady through the process."
"What our research tells us about Joe Burrow is he's his own man. He's not going to be talked into saying things for other people's benefit. So if that's what he said, that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to getting to know him, getting to meet him through the process. Haven't been able to sit down with him yet, but we've got that on the horizon."
We'll talk more about Joe Burrow's plans to hold off throwing here at the Combine. But Mike T, I'll start with you in terms of do you not want to play for the Bengals? Do you have any issues at all with where we landed, at least at this point?
"No, I mean, as I said last week, Joe Burrow, at the end of the day, he does not have leverage. The Cincinnati Bengals have the first pick in the draft, and if they want to draft Joe Burrow, that's where he's going to go. Now, with that said, I think it's incumbent upon Zach Taylor and the Bengal organization to create the right environment where he could come in and they could build something sustainable and truly transformative. So I think where we went in, Wendy, is appropriate. I think last week he probably could have handled that better, but to Joe Burrow's credit, I think they tweaked things, and I think they're in a good spot now.
I think he's been well coached this past week.
Well, that's how it works, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, and Adam, through all your contacts, it appears that Joe Burrow will likely be the number one overall pick.
Yeah, he's projected to be the number one pick. I still think that's where the Bengals ultimately go, and they're sitting there in that spot. This is a team that needs somebody to revitalize that franchise, and they are expected to look to trade Andy Dalton at some point this offseason. And so when you're sitting there in a division with Lamar Jackson there in Baltimore, I think that they know that they have to get somebody in there that's going to be able to put some points on the board, Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, and this is, I think, going to be the pick for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Look, even if Joe was considering trying to exercise some kind of leverage, which really the only leverage you have is to withhold your services and not play and not report, even if he was thinking along those lines, or let's just say he's doing a deep dive trying to figure out exactly just what does Cincinnati offer me as far as developing me as a quarterback, could you blame him? Could you really blame him for really wanting to dig deep on exactly what is the future going to look like over the course of my rookie contract with this football team? What exactly is Zach Taylor? What exactly is Mike Brown's commitment to going ahead and building out this roster around me? Because we all know, look, a lot of what's going to happen to him has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with everything that's going to be around him. Just look at the past three or four drafts and how certain players have benefited from going to certain teams. Just look at L.A. Look at the difference between Jared Goff's rookie year and his second year when Sean McVay came in. It flipped. His rookie year, people were saying, send Jared Goff to Canada. All of a sudden, his second year was like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe he's not so bad. You couldn't blame him if that was a thought.
But Lewis, to that point, I also think it's an opportunity if you're Zach Taylor to say, hey, what's happened in the past that's irrelevant. We're going to pair myself with you, and we're going to build something great, and we can't worry about what's happened before. We have a lot of work to do. But if I'm the Bengals, if I have a head coach in Zach Taylor that's worked with quarterbacks, like you mentioned, Jared Goff, and to get someone of Joe Burrow's ability and character, I think that's a great opportunity for the Bengals.
I know three things about Joe Burrow. One is that if something were to go on with the Bengals, it is not going to happen in public. And this has been addressed in the past week. It's going to happen behind the scenes. So whatever we hear from this point on, Don't even look at it. Don't think about it because it has nothing to do with what is going on behind the scenes. The second thing is this guy's a different cat. He goes to a beat of his own drummer. He doesn't care what anyone else has done in the past, what everyone else is going to do in the future. He's going to do what's best for Joe Burrow. But the third thing that I know about him is he's a football guy. His brothers played linebacker at safety at Nebraska. His dad's almost a four-decade coach in football. He is a football guy at its core. He's from Ohio, obviously. I think when it's all said and done, he winds up going to Cincinnati if he's that number one overall pick. But again, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen not in the media. It's going to happen behind the scenes.
Again, Joe Burrow not expected to throw on Thursday. He said he just wasn't ready yet. Not a huge deal. Sam Darnold, Kyler Murray, the last 2 years have opted not to throw here at the Combine as well. What did make headlines on Sunday, oddly enough, Burrow's hand measurements. The measurables for quarterbacks took place on Sunday. On the smaller side for an NFL quarterback. I love this tweet. Listen, here's what he said after it was suggested his hand size was small. Considering retirement after I was informed the football would be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts. Well, he's got good company because here's what Super Bowl 54 MVP Patrick Mahomes had to say, who had just slightly larger hands than did Burrow. My small hands are doing great so far. All right, he should say. Believe in ya. Here's Burrow earlier today addressing his hand size.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these measurements, you can take so much from them. If it's a glaring issue on film with turnovers, yeah, it's probably an issue. But, you know, I didn't have a lot of fumbles or anything like that, so I just tried to, you know, make a little joke out of it. I think it's a non-factor. I don't get paid to, you know, talk about measurements and analyze the measurements. I get paid to play football, so that's what I'm going to do.
All right, look, we're not going to make too much of this, but there have been questions what they actually do, what they're actually measuring here. So, worry not. We've got a ruler and we've got Lewis and Todd.
You want to be measured, Adam? What you're really trying to do is you're trying to measure the expanse of someone's hand. So, I mean, they put it down on the ground and you actually hear about guys actually doing hand exercises in order to stretch their hand as wide as possible. Although, I mean, when you're grabbing a football, you're not actually going.
As my daughter says, I have Sarge's fingers.
You're trying to measure from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the pinky here. And this is hard because, I mean, this is a hard ruler and you can't really get a good accurate measurement. You look, Todd's probably like, just under nine, right at
nine
inches. Okay, I'll give you nine.
It worked out just fine for the spiders.
But you know what's interesting?
No, it didn't. That's important. If I had 10 chance, I would have actually done something with my career.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, when you watch the tape of Joe Burrow, look, there are situations where people come from behind and strip him when he's trying to move up in the pocket and run. I mean, that's going to happen if you have nine, if you have 10-inch hands. So, I mean, it is not a glaring, obvious problem as far as him on the football field, and that's why I think it's really just going to be something that we'll hopefully wind up forgetting about sooner rather than later.
The biggest thing is, and you know this, it's with all of these drills, you know as well, Mike, you go back to the tape and you try to find something after the fact that says, okay, now I'm going to look specifically at these things. So you're going to look at cold weather, rain, and then ball security. And Joe Burrow is as good as any college quarterback you're ever going to see in the pocket in terms of two hands on the ball and protecting the ball. I saw him in 2018, the last weekend in September, against Ole Miss. You can go back and watch the tape. My suit was soaking wet when I did the open of that game. It was pouring rain, driving rain, and anyone who says it doesn't rain in Baton Rouge on a Saturday night is lying. lying to you? Because it poured, and he completed 72% of his throws with 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions in that game. So you go back to the tape, and you try to look at these things, and what the tape tells you is he's just fine.
You know, I had a
low in our theory here.
Yeah, I had an interesting experience with Hantsi. So I was fortunate enough in 2008 we traded for Brett Favre, and just as a fan of sport, I can't wait to go out to the first practice and watch Brett Favre throw. There's nothing physically imposing about Brett, and he goes out there and he's throwing better than anybody I've ever seen. And I asked him, like, Brett, what is it about you? Where's this velocity comes from? And he said, you know what, Mike? I have long fingers, and I could actually cup a football the way a lot of people throw a softball. I could actually be over the top, and that's where I get all my velocity from. And just watching him at practice, it was unbelievable to watch. So I know, as Lewis showed, there's a tradition of how we measure hands, but finger length is actually an underrated aspect of playing the quarterback.
And it's not
so far
back,
small hands but long fingers.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And you know what? My pinky, and all the time throwing a football, my pinky's of the five, it's easily the least important finger in the hand. And I can't remember it ever being a big factor. It's all like it's there in the grip. The pinky to me doesn't matter. It's archaic how we're measuring the quarterback's hand span. Now, with that said, there's 34 quarterbacks in the last 14 years who have been drafted that have had hands of 9 inches and smaller, and really only 2 of them have had any sort of sustained success. Ryan Tannehill is one of them, and Jared Goff is the other. And that's it. So there are 32 out of 34 who have failed. But are we going to say that he's going to that Joe Burrow's not going to have success because his hands measure at 9 inches?
Something tells me that the reason for their failure wasn't because they were a quarter inch under 9 inches.
That's not the only
variable. But see,
take a look at the list.
We're in that time of year. I mean
that's what happens.
So, one of the things that we're trying to get done this weekend, you already touched on it, Todd, which is you collect all this information and then you want to go back and just do more work on it. And as Joe Burrow himself said, if fumbling was an issue, he'd play in the SEC, he played outdoors, we would know about it. So it's just another box that you want to check. And look, his tape is his tape. This is a very small part of the overall puzzle.
Well, as he says, don't worry about the football slipping out of his tiny little hands. It's going to be all right. All right, Adam Schefter, I do want to talk about something that is going to affect every single person here at the Combine, and that's a new labor agreement.
Yeah.
There's an important meeting today. Get us up to date.
Well, this is really a significant meeting here that will occur that will potentially dictate the future of football or not. It will set into motion a chain of events that either leads to a year of chaos and not knowing what the future of football will be if this deal is not approved, or it will lead to long-term labor peace over 10 years if the players decide to sign off on it. And where it's at, basically boiled down, is that the NFLPA executive board objects to 17 games on the regular season schedule. And they have negotiated this deal for 10 months, and both sides have come to a place where they thought that they had a deal. But the executive board really does not like the 17-game configuration in the regular season. Now, from the flip side, the NFL has tried to make it more palatable by saying, okay, we're going to have 12 fewer padded practices during the summer, 1 fewer preseason game, expanded rosters to help out, more players on the practice squad, more time off in the offseason. So the NFL is trying to appease the players and trying to give them more time off and more time away from the game. And we'll see whether or not the players find that palatable. But there's literally billions, with a B, billions of dollars at stake here.
And again, that meeting expected to take place about 5 o'clock Eastern, Adam, here in Indianapolis. Tua Tagovailoa at the NFL Combine, but not participating in workouts as he continues to work his way back from a season-ending hip injury against Mississippi State. That was in November. The Alabama quarterback addressed the media earlier today regarding his dislocated hip and the recovery.
Up to this point, I've been rehabbing my butt off. You know, after March 9th, when I get clearance from my doctors, then it's full go up until my pro day. This rehab process has been it's been gradually getting, you know, upped as far as workouts with what we've been doing. So just strengthening all the parts around the hip, you know, the glute, the hamstring, the quad, just being able to be ready that once March 9th hits and we're cleared to go, then I'll be able to do everything. I'm not too sure if I'll be able to throw for Alabama's pro day, but I'll be holding my own pro day on April 9th. As a competitor, I want to be able to play. But you look at a lot of the guys that are really good, and a lot of the greats, you know, they've been mentored, you know, by big time quarterbacks as well, and veteran quarterbacks. So, you know, if the team needs me to go out there and start for them, I'll do that. But if they need me to sit behind someone and learn from them, man, I can't see what's wrong with that as well.
Tua spent almost 10 hours yesterday participating in medical evaluations at the hospital. It's a very thorough investigation, understandably. Yeah. So I'll start with you, Adam, on the perception, at least right now, on where he is and the progress.
I think there are people, when you listen to the situation, talk to people around the league, they think that everybody knows what he could do, and they feel like he's rushing this, like he's out to prove something, and he's going to have his own individual pro day separate from Alabama on April 9th, and they wonder, why is he doing this when he doesn't have anything to prove? We know what he can do. We've seen it on tape. Sit back, relax, let the pro scouts and front office members assess the tape, see what they can do. I mean, you're talking about a vascularized region in which...
What was that word?
Blood flow. Vascularized. And if... that area is in jeopardy, and there's not a lot of blood flow there. If there's any risks, there's any hang-ups, any setbacks, that's a major risk for him long-term. So, again, I think people want to see him slow down, not speed up. And in the competitor, you see he wants to get back out there. He wants to show people he could do. They know what he could do. So slow down.
To take that a step further, there's something in the rules known as PUP, which is you could actually draft him where he would be ineligible to play for the first 6 weeks of the season. So to Adam's point, where you could let him fully rehab, take your time, and then he may or not play his first year. Go back to Kansas City a couple of years ago. Kansas City trades up for Patrick Mahomes. They have Alex Smith. He sits until the last game of the season. The rest is history. So it could be a situation where he's drafted. He may not even be eligible to play for the first 6 weeks. And, Ab, to your point, that's okay. We're talking about the next 10 years. Let's get the injury right and take our time.
I talked to Nick Saban last month on the phone, and he said, you know, if Tua were to come back before they made the decision, so it was in late January, actually, before they made the decision that he was going to come out for this year's draft, that if he decided to come back to Alabama, that he was going to sit him for 6, 7, 8 games, whatever it took, and then see if he was physically able to play, if he decided to come back and play for the Crimson Tide. That same mindset should be there for any NFL team that drafts him. You shouldn't be in a rush. And Adam, to your point, we have 33 games on it. We have a second half in the national championship where he makes one of the greatest throws in the history of college football. We have 24 starts in the last 2 years on this guy, playing mostly in the SEC against great competition. I know everything I need to know.
You know what?
I don't necessarily
get the impression that he's trying to rush things. I think one of the things that people will look at, though, is the fact that the kid is intrinsically a very high-level competitor that actually he doesn't like being sedentary. He wants to get out there and do things. But I think he also kind of gave you a little bit of a window into exactly how I think he sees himself reaching his full potential. If you notice, he said, look, some of the greatest quarterbacks actually took some time to sit and watch and be around the right atmosphere. I think Tua, to me, sounds like he's someone who is very much so cognizant of, I need to get to the right place. I need to get to the right place that can really bring me along. And I'm telling you, the conversations I've had with Steve Young about this just stick in my head every day when we talk about quarterbacks, about how important it is to get to the right place. And I think Tua is very much so aware of that.
I don't think there's any questions about his mental makeup. I don't think there's any questions about his physical skills. He's an elite talent. What I would say to you, Mike, as a former general manager who's had experience with players with hip injuries, if you were in a front office now and had need at the quarterback position, and you were still with the Dolphins, and you were considering going to get Tua, what would be your mindset as it pertains to his hip injury?
Yeah, that's easy. I get the head coach, I get the owner, and we have total alignment that he is not playing for the foreseeable future. As you mentioned, Adam, it's just a part of the body that's really tricky. It takes a while to come back. We deal with bright lines in football. ACL, 6 months. Achilles, X amount of time. With this hip injury in particular, it's just unpredictable. So if we're taking the player, as we discussed, we need to have a plan to say, hey, we could go out and win games with Ryan Fitzpatrick or some other veteran quarterback so we could put Tua in the best position possible for the next 10 years.
How much would this injury concern you?
Hugely, because, well, first of all, it's his third lower body injury. And I agree with Todd. Take nothing away. He's had unbelievable production. But because the injury in and of itself is hard to predict, I would want to take all the time in the world. And if I drafted him, I want to have another plan at quarterback.
Tagovailoa, if you didn't hear before, hoping to throw not at Alabama's pro day, but at his own pro day on April 9th. Nick Saban, by the way, for all his first-round picks, hasn't had a quarterback drafted in the first round. For the 37th year, the NFL has descended on downtown Indianapolis for this week's scouting combine. 337 players have been invited to showcase their skill set to make their case for an opportunity at the next level. This guy, chief among them, Joe Burrow, put on an absolute show. He won a national championship for LSU and did so in impressive fashion, completing a whopping 76% of his passes. Not only that, but he won the Heisman Trophy in dominant fashion, receiving a record 90.7% of first place votes. Josina Anderson joins us now, and Joe Burrow had an opportunity to deal with that media throng today. How did he handle things?
Well, Wendy, listen, this is my 10th combine this year, and I'd have to say this is the biggest crowd and camera count that I saw, which was for Joe Burrow today, at least in the convention center space, compared to the craze that I saw for, let's say, Johnny Manziel or Tim Tebow when the presses used to be held here at Lucas. And I would say the biggest thing that stood out to me about Joe Burrow was just his politician-like confidence. Definitely very comfortable in his skin. Wendy, it's like the young kids say, he looked Gucci, good to go on day one. And then I think the biggest question people wanted to ask Joe Burrow today simply is, do you even want to go to the Bengals, who were 2-14 last year, especially since he was quoted about, asking about his leverage that he has in the Dallas Star Telegram and talking about he has his own process and the Bengals have their own. And he said to me specifically, that was because I was just talking about my approach to the combine and electing not to throw and also work out in the leverage that he gained from his championship run. And lastly, I asked him, what is your concern about fit when it comes to the Bengals, especially when you consider Jared Goff pre-Sean McVay days or even Tannehill before his emergence in Tennessee? And this is what he had to say.
Yeah, of course I want to be the first pick. You know, that's every kid's dream. You know, I've worked really, really hard for this opportunity, and I'm blessed to be in this position, and a lot of people helped me get here. I think with any quarterback, fit is really important. But you don't have a lot of say in that in the draft. You know, whoever picks you, and you got to go play. So I'm going to try to make whoever picks me work. I think that my skill set is really diverse, that can fit in a lot of different schemes. So I'm going to try to be the best player I can for whoever drafts me.
Yeah, Burrow told me the best fit that he had with the coach was at Joe Brady, who's a passing game coordinator for the Tigers, because he let him do whatever he wanted, basically, when it comes to making his own reads and checks at the line of scrimmage. And when I asked him, okay, well, what is it that you're looking for in your relationship with the head coach or play caller at the NFL level, he said, trust from the play caller that I can execute whatever they design, and also trust in the fact that they're calling the best call against any defense, you know, for me. So that's what he said he's looking for, and he hopes to look forward to speaking with head coach Zach Taylor from the Bengals in the next couple days. Wendy, back to you.
Jojo, thank you. Zach Taylor, by the way, will join us a little later on in the show to talk about Joe Burrow as well. We turn our attention now to the Tennessee Titans and their pending free agents, highlighted, of course, by the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, who went 7-3 after taking over as the starting quarterback in Week 7. There is also Marcus Mariota, the reigning rushing champ Derrick Henry, Jack Conklin, and corner Logan Ryan. Here's Susie Culver now live with Titans head coach Mike Vrabel at the Indianapolis Convention Center.
Hi, Wendy. So Mike Vrabel and the Titans, like a lot of teams, are going to see their starting quarterbacks potentially hit free agency next month. But there's an even more urgent date coming this week to tag or not to tag. What kind of things go into that process?
Well, it's the same thing for every player. You identify those players that have expiring contracts, and then you have to make tough decisions on who you want back, and those players have to want to be back. It's a two-way street with free agency, and you know, John and his staff have worked very hard to try to identify those guys that we want to have back.
So Ryan Tannehill had the best season of his career. You guys make it to the AFC Championship. I mean, for you and your years in the league, what's your philosophy on, can the grass really be greener?
I think that's something, the cornerstone of the Players Association is free agency. And having been a player and understanding that, that's something that every player wants to take advantage of and get to. But then again, in the same sense, there is a certain comfort level of knowing the player, at least on my end and in John's end, is that this is a guy that we understand how operates. And then I think the player may have some comfort in saying, this is how they're going to use me, and this is how I'm going to be coached. And I like it at this certain place, whether it's Tennessee or New England or Pittsburgh or Kansas City.
What impressed you most just about the way he acclimated to this team and took over the leadership position?
I think when you come to a new team as a quarterback, it's very important that you grasp the offense and all the nuances of it as fast as you can. And Ryan did that, because when you get an opportunity, you don't want to go in there and have to look back at Arthur or Pat and say, hey, what's the check here? What are we doing? What's the run check? And Ryan did that, and he was prepared. And when he got his opportunity, he made the most of it.
So you can't talk about other players who are on other teams until they're officially free agents, but the rumors are out there and they're linking you guys to your former teammate, Tom Brady. When you hear stuff like that, what's your reaction? Do you chuckle? Do you roll your eyes?
I would say it's just a unique situation. Having played with Tom and having a relationship with Tom and his family, Carter texts me and says, is Giselle at NBA? And I'm like, no, Giselle's not at NBA. Like, I don't think. And she wasn't. But I just think it's unique that a head coach played with a quarterback that has an expiring contract that's been in New England for 20 years. I think it's just unique.
And is there something that needs to be addressed? You know, if you are courting Ryan, who is potentially a free agent, to, like, put all that stuff out on the table to talk about what's going on. How does all that work?
I don't think that sometimes you have to respond to everything that's said in social media or media. I think our players and most of them are pretty knowledgeable on that. We try not to get caught up in too much of the noise that surrounds our game or our team.
All right, so league's leading rusher, Derrick Henry, also going to be a free agent. He was the running game in the playoffs. What's your philosophy on a running back versus the running game?
Yeah, I think that the philosophy is it takes all 11. You know, it takes the quarterback to be able to get us into the right play to carry out his fake. Receivers have to block every time that we broke an explosive play down the field. You know, there's guys that are finishing longer than the guy with the ball, and that's something that we believe in, is the effort and finish, and that won't change as long as I'm the head football coach. But in saying that, you know, Derek ran hard. He was durable. He was very efficient. And I appreciated that he got better as a leader. Like, his leadership skills improved throughout the season. And I knew he was going to run well, and he'll run well next year. But he improved as a leader, and I was proud of him for that.
As this whole process starts, you were so close. What does it take to take that next step?
With starting over. You know, every year is a new year. There's going to be new players. We already have new coaches. There are going to be new plays that we like on all three phases, in special teams and offense and defense. But I know that we'll have to play better next year in order to play some of these games at home. You know, we essentially had four road playoff games, and that's not the success or the recipe for success in being a championship football team. You can't go on the road for 4 weeks and think that you're going to win a championship.
So with your unique knowledge mix as a player and as a coach, some big decisions could be made this week. How many games in the regular season there are? What advice would you offer the players on doing the right thing, on making the right decision?
Well, I just think that in any deal, in life or contracts, when two sides are negotiating, it has to be, each side has to feel like they got something out of it. And that's how I tried to lead when I was on the executive committee, and try to make it right for not only the current players or the current owners or the current team, but those ones that came before you and the ones that are going to come after you.
Okay, Mike, appreciate you stopping by.
You.
Good luck through this whole process.
Okay.
Okay, Wendy?
Susie, Coach, thank you. Obviously, Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. Impossible not to start with the quarterback situation, Adam, in Tennessee. Everybody's talking about it.
Well, it's interesting because it puts the Titans, I think, in a interesting position. Let's play it out a little bit. If they put the franchise tag on Ryan Tannehill, which some people have thought, I don't think it's going to go that way, but if they put the franchise tag on Ryan Tannehill, that would preclude them from going after Tom Brady. They couldn't do that. If they don't tag Ryan Tannehill and leave open the window to pursue Tom Brady, you put losing Ryan Tannehill at risk to another team because he's not tagged. So if you're the Titans, you're walking a fine line here about trying to decide what to do. And I think we're going to get an idea of their intentions on Tom Brady here when the franchise tagging window opens on Thursday and lasts until March 12th. If they tag Ryan Tannehill, they're not going after Tom Brady. If they don't tag Ryan Tannehill, that at least leaves open the idea. It doesn't mean they will pursue him, but it leaves open the idea that they can go after Brady.
I see that differently. I've been in a situation where we franchise a player, and then took the tag off subsequently. So until Ryan Tannehill signs the franchise tender, they actually have some flexibility. So I think this has a ways to go to play out. I'm not saying that's a likely scenario, but that's certainly a possibility.
But you're also putting a franchise tag on a player in a way to make sure that he's your property, to safeguard him. And I think if you're the Titans, no?
No, I think sometimes when you use the franchise tag, it's to keep optionality open, to say that I want to pursue Tom Brady, and simultaneous to that, I want to retain the rights to this player for now and then see how events unfold from there. Now, he's 31 years old. He just took you the AFC Championship game. That's not a bad fallback scenario if I'm Tennessee while I pursue Tom Brady. Things switch if Ryan Tannehill signs the tender.
What's interesting is talking about Ryan Tannehill, and I don't mean this, you know, directly to you, but to consider Ryan Tannehill a fallback option, to me, this seems absolutely ludicrous. I mean, Ryan Tannehill a fallback option seems ludicrous, considering how well the guy played when given, you know, the totality of their philosophy down there, which was strike with big plays early, use the running game late, take the entire comprehensive, you know, just total team effort approach. The guy played about as well as you could possibly play. And I would be hard-pressed. I would really, really be shocked if Tennessee does not decide that they are going to go ahead and try and sign into a long-term deal and continue to build out the rest of this roster, mainly on the defensive side of the football, get some young pass rushers, fortify this defense.
Music to Mike Tannenbaum's ears.
I mean, look, that's really, it sounds like a pretty easy decision for me. As far as looking at this from the outside in, as my chair sits there and goes down.
No.
But nevertheless, it just seems like one of those things that's it's an easy decision. Now, whether or not it's easy to execute, it's another story.
Well, to that end, after being named the Titans starter in Week 7, Ryan Tannehill had the second highest completion rate in the NFL, second only to Drew Brees. He did play well. Well, I'm sure there's no doubt he'd like to do it again. I think everybody in Kansas City would certainly like to see you do it again. Coach, first of all, oh, what a thrill. Congratulations. A long time coming, so I have to ask, you know, what's it been like since that fateful Sunday a few weeks ago?
You know, it's been good.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I got a couple free meals, I mean, you know, which is always good.
Any cheeseburgers included?
Yeah, a couple cheeseburgers, yeah. No, it's been good. So, but I've loved every minute of it. However, we had to get back to work. So, you know, you can love it all you want, but the NFL doesn't stop for anybody.
How quickly does that realization hit that because you played in the final game, the off season is condensed?
Yeah, so the Friday after the season, I snuck out to California, right, and spent a day there relaxing on Saturday. Sunday, we were right back in it, so which is great. I mean, I love doing what I'm doing, so I enjoy getting back at it.
You know, Coach, talking about the game, I mean, as you know, there's always this certain point in the game where you know that it's all about the hit, all right? In the 3rd and 15 play.
Sure.
You know, NFL Films captures that moment. Patrick's on that, you know, talking to Eric about, you know, can we run Wasp on this play? That kind of situation where Patrick actually really asks you for certain plays. How is that becoming more the norm? Are you really letting him kind of like help you kind of construct those moments more now?
Yeah, so when we go over on the bench, we talk about those things, and Wasp probably came up 20 times during the game. We were just having a hard time keeping 97 and 99 out of the backfield.
Right,
So we talked to everybody. We talked to the offensive line, said it possibly would be coming up. And then Patrick called for it at that time. Mm-hmm. So and then asked if we could protect it. So I said, I think we can do that. Let's go. Let's give it a whirl. I think our guys are feeling pretty good about it. And we called it and went. So.
Coach, you know, obviously you knew what you had, and you talked a lot about it that first year when Patrick sat. And then a tremendous first season as a starter. And now this, what's it been like to watch this kid become everything you believed initially he would be?
Yeah, so I think all people that are born on that day are really good people. I'm just saying. So they're good at what they do. It's been great watching him. It's been great watching him grow. I'm not going to say he's a natural, but he's a natural from a coach's standpoint of loving the game. So all the intangibles he's got, he wants to be great and even better than that. So he wants you to keep feeding him ideas to make him even better than what he is now. He's a team guy all the way around. He's not an eye guy. He brings everybody into the picture and helps make them all a little bit better, and whether it's a coach or a player. So he's just a pleasure to be around, and that part's not going to change. That's his foundation, and he always comes back to that. No matter what commercials he does, how many of these things he does, he always comes back to that, the hard work part of it.
Yeah, one of my favorite players that you guys signed, and I think a lot of people talked about him, but I got the chance to talk to Tyron before the game started, And he's just, look, he plays that position. He plays safety, so you know I'm all naturally partial. What effect did he have on the football team this year?
Yeah, one of those, he's a leader.
Yeah.
And like Patrick is on offense, he's on defense. Yeah. He's just got a way about him. He's smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has this energy. But my joke that we lock him up in a cage all week, and then we let the badger out, and he makes all these funny, you know, they squish him in that, and he makes all these funny noises when he comes out. But he's incredible, and great to be around, so positive, and he loves the game.
Yeah.
You know, he would beg me for an iPad to take home with him so he could get right into it and jump right back on it.
That's awesome.
Coach, we'd be remiss not to ask you. You talk so highly of your quarterback, understandably so. Is there any pressure at all to get a longer-term deal in place for Patrick?
Yeah, again, that's Brett's world. I mean, Brett Veach's world. He does that, and I have full trust in him and his guys that they pound all that out. There's so many variables that go into it. Just like Chris is, there's so many variables that go into making that right. I mean, you got to try to keep this team together, and you have a salary cap, so there's just certain ways that you work it and try to put it together. And they do a heck of a job with it.
Will there be any time for vacation before we let you go?
I will in the summer.
In the summer.
Summer we'll get a nice break. And listen, if I didn't love what I was doing, I probably wouldn't be doing it this age. I love doing what I'm doing. So
well, fun. I think it's working all right.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Wendy. Thanks. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, appreciate it.
We continue here with NFL Live from the Scouting Combine at Lucas Oil Stadium, the 34th consecutive year we've been here in Indianapolis, or the Combine has been here, I should say. Let's get the latest on Chase Young, Adam, and his plans for the week here in Indy.
Wendy, he's not going to work out. He's going to skip working out. Look, everybody expects him to go number two. There's not a lot for him to gain by working out this week, so he's going to skip. He's going to participate in the Ohio State Pro Day. He'll perform for the Scouts at that time, but I think that he just figures, what upside is there going through the drills here in Indianapolis this week, and as much as everybody would like to see him?
All right, so if that's the case, the Ohio State pass rusher won't be on the field here at the Combine. He will only do interviews and medical testing. Young led the FBS with 16.5 sacks in 2019 and is the number one player currently on Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest big board. And, Mike, let me start with you. How do you feel as a guy who did evaluate talent here at the Combine about Chase Young opting out of these workouts?
Well, sure. As a fan of the sport, I would love to see Chase Young in prime time. As great as he is and as talented, I'd love to see him go, you know, best against the best. He's not going to do it. It's disappointing. But if I'm the Washington Redskins, I turn in the card. He's too good. He's too talented. I certainly would challenge him. There's 45 interviews that each team could have for 18 minutes. That would be question number one is, Chase, if you're so great and you're so competitive, why would you turn down the opportunity to compete against your peers on prime time? I'd ask him that question, and I'd still try to draft him.
And I think one thing to look at is, look at the Boses. They knew that they weren't going to run great times. You know, Joey Bosa ran in the low 4.8s. Nick Bosa ran in the high 4.7s. But they came out here and they competed their tails off. And when you start to look at the last 5 years in terms of defensive ends, edge rushers, I think you stack the Bosas up with Chase Young in terms of overall talent. Myles Garrett is another guy that I look to. And I have the same grades, 95 across the board on Chase Young, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, and Myles Garrett, and Bradley Chubb in 2018 was a 94. So we're talking about elite physical tools. But I remember a time when defensive players just all used to show up and say, all right, let's go.
You know,
man.
Exactly. And I hardly doubt that much of this is player driven. I think there are outside forces that are telling players and advising players, you don't really need to do this. Because look, some of the great players of all time have accepted, I don't want to necessarily say the challenge, but the opportunity to come here and show out. Okay, the thing that I remember the most, I mean, I remember, just think about what Deion Sanders did when he came to the Combine, how he came here. Look, he didn't need to prove anything to anybody. He's one of the great college players of all time. You could tell he was going to be a Hall of Famer when he was in college, and he said, you know what, I'm just going to show you just how fast I am, then I'm going to unlace him and go home, but I'm going to run the 40 here just to show you. Chase Young, I mean, what... Everybody knows what he can do on the football field, so why not compete against these guys? There is really no downside to competing here.
Let me ask you this, Todd. How much real estate is there between, if we can agree that he's the top edge rusher in this draft, how much difference between number two, Chase Young, and number two, whoever that may be for you?
What does Adam Schefter have in terms of acreage in the back of his back of his house?
Of his mansion? I mean,
yeah, we're talking acres, acres and acres.
No, I mean, not much.
I think it's, but there are some very very good other players in terms of positions on the defensive side. Derek Brown from Auburn is a flat out stud. I mean, he is an absolute just mauler in the interior in the defensive line. He's not an edge rusher. Jerry Okuda, the defensive corner from Ohio State, is going to be a top five pick, and he's an exceptional player, another in the great line of defensive backs from Ohio State. But if you're talking just pure talent off the edge, it's not even close to Chase.
Let me jump in here and just say this real quick. Look, Todd just mentioned a name that people need to remember and keep in the back of their mind. Kasun is going to be in the forefront of your mind. Derek Brown from Auburn.
Yeah.
You, not only is he one of those big physical just wreckers, this is a guy who plays the game hard. And I mean, he is flying around. I can remember, look, remember he picked up the fumble against Florida and almost ran it back for a touchdown. I'm sitting there looking, this is a guy who's like 6'5", 315, 320 pounds.
With arms down to his ankles.
Who's incredible. Keep an eye on that young man's name.
That your guy?
As we keep going.
Oh,
you know
one
me,
every
I fall in love.
I know, that's
year.
What I'm asking.
But I'll tell you, this guy right here, he's the real, I hope he works out.
He
here.
Made some really I hope good he offensive here. Linemen look silly.
I mean, he's
like Ndamukong Suh almost.
So why is he not viewed now?
He is in the league.
But because we have
why is there acreage?
No, that he's an inside player. No. But you know what? But he's an inside player. He's not an edge rusher.
Right.
That's why.
And I'd rather have an elite interior player than an edge rusher.
Yeah, which is a whole other discussion, but you're right.
Listen, good thing. We got a few weeks.
We have plenty of time.
Just go back to Chase Young for a minute, just to take you behind the curtains. All these teams are going to be asking Chase Young that question. And Lewis, you bring up a really good point about outside forces, because one of the things I would say to Chase is, who made that decision that you're not working out? Was that you or your agent?
Yep.
So when you're late to practice, are we going to call you or your agent? You're a professional. Are you accountable? So I think you bring up a really interesting point, and all the teams are going to take advantage of those 18 minutes, and he's going to have to answer that question. Obviously, he's presumably still going to go to Washington, but that's a question that every team's going to want to know, like, about his makeup.
Sure.
Mike Tannenbaum swinging the hammer today. Ben Roethlisberger, not always the biggest social media guy, but looking sharp in this latest video, throwing for the first time since his season-ending elbow surgery. He met with doctors in L.A. on Friday, was cleared to begin throwing for the first time since September. Here's Steelers GM Kevin Colbert on Big Ben's progress.
We saw the video. He was with John Norwig. They visited the doctors out in California. He posted that video, which was very encouraging. We'll continue to follow the doctor's orders. We'll continue to encourage Ben. And everybody understands it's game days that are most important. But, of course, participating in mini camps, OTAs, whatever he can, will be part of his ability to have a great season. But, again, I'm not worried about the surgery because it might be a better result.
All right, Lewis, start with you. Do you have concerns about Ben Roethlisberger returning to Pro Bowl form?
I mean, there's always concern because you just don't know. You're still in the rehabilitation phase, and anything could go wrong. But it is very positive, and it is encouraging to see him actually out there and throwing a football around. And this is a guy who's had a tremendous career, one of the best throwers of the football. It isn't always technically exactly how you draw it up, but he can throw the football. One of the great competitors, one of the toughest individuals to play that position probably ever. And a guy who I know this has the respect of defensive players across the league, across many different years of playing against him, who have all said this very same thing. Number 7 is the real deal, and he changes the total complexion of that organization when he's on the football
field. And by the way, again, to get back to this, look at the division that he's now in. Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, Joe Burrow likely in Cincinnati. So the Steelers need somebody to give them a chance in that division against a good trio of young quarterbacks.
All right, let's turn our attention now to other buzz here at the Combine, because that's, you know, everyone's here, everyone's talking, and we'll talk first about something we've continued to talk about, Adam Schefter, and that's a new contract for Dak Prescott in Dallas.
Well, Stephen Jones, the Cowboys executive vice president, said this week that there have been no contract discussions since September, and the fact that there have been no talks tells you that they cannot be very far along. Now, just last week, Stephen Jones said that talks were fixing to heat up, or things were fixing to heat up. I don't think he meant that contract talks
were heating up. I think that this whole situation could be heating up.
Lewis, a wide receiver who could benefit from a big week here in Indianapolis.
No question about it. It's Michael Pittman Jr. from USC. This is an individual I got to see in person out in Colorado when he matched up against them on a Friday night, and he absolutely ripped them to shreds. This young man's about 6'4", almost 220 pounds. He reminds you of Mike Evans from Tampa Bay. If he comes out here and blows it away in the 40, remember his name on night one of the draft.
Mike, we know the top three quarterbacks, or think we do anyway. Who could be number four?
Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, very intriguing. Went 11-2 as a junior. There was a coaching change this past year. Gary Anderson came in. He really struggled against BYU and Boise, but I thought he improved in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. This is a really important week for Jordan Love. If he does well, he can work his way to the fourth quarterback taken and maybe the back half of the first round.
Adam, what's the latest on Stephon Diggs and his status with the Vikings?
Vikings general manager Rick Spielman said today that he expected that Stephon Diggs would be a part of this organization. But speculation continues to persist that if the Vikings got the right offer, that maybe they would be interested in perhaps moving on from him. Remember, Rick Spielman once said that there was no way that they'd trade Percy Harvin, only to see him traded a few months later, and general managers never would speak the absolute truth about exactly what they're feeling.
Especially in Indy right now to enterprising reporters like yourself.
Mike, you never told one thing that wasn't 100% accurate, I'm sure.
As Coach Parcells would say, it is America, and I have the right to change my mind.
Okay. The Andy Dalton era in Cincinnati could be done. 2020 marks the final year of his deal, and the Bengals could cut him with no dead money. Seven-time Pro Bowl wideout A.J. Green scheduled to become a free agent after missing the entirety of the 2019 season due to torn ligaments in his ankle. And the Bengals will look to improve a defense that ranked last in the NFL over the last two seasons in both total defense and QBR allowed over that span. Cincinnati will have to decide whether quarterback is the way to go with that number one overall pick. They are on the clock. The Bengals have used the number one overall pick in the NFL draft three previous times, most recently in 2003 when they took Heisman winner Carson Palmer out of USC. We're here now with Bengals head coach Zach Taylor. And, Coach, it's interesting because this time last year, a different scenario for you as a first-time head coach. You know, if you look back on this past year, what came across your desk that surprised you that you did not anticipate?
I don't think anything surprised you, but there's just a lot of adversity you face over the course of the season. And you know that's going to happen, whether it's injuries or whatnot. But the most important thing now is that we learn from all those experiences. It's not, hey, let's put that season behind us and get ready for 2020. It's what can we pull that make ourselves a better team, better coaching staff, that we can utilize all those situations that occurred to us and be the best team we can be in 2020.
Zach, about a week ago, Joe Burrow came out and said that while Cincinnati may have leverage, Joe Burrow has leverage as well. Just generally speaking, not being associated with any one player, what are your thoughts about if a player wants to be drafted or not drafted by a certain team?
Well, I know that if you're around our coaching staff and our players, you can see the belief that we have and that we're going to do great things in Cincinnati, and everyone's going to want to be a part of it. And so when guys get around us, they're going to feel that energy, feel that belief that we have, and we're very certain that everything will take care of itself.
Coach, regardless of who it turns out to be, and although we presume it will be Joe Burrow, your team needs a quarterback. What are you looking for? What are the most important qualities for you as a head coach that you want to see in your quarterback?
Well, a guy that elevates those around him. You know, gets the most out of his teammates. Guys can look at him in tough situations, adverse situations, and know that that guy's in total command and he's going to make us all better and he's going to see us through the situation. The timing and accuracy, full understanding of the system that they're in. Those are all the traits that you want to see from those guys.
Do you see those in Joe Burrow?
He's certainly, when he goes 15-0 and wins a national championship and really did help those guys reach their full potential around him, you see a lot of great traits from him.
Zach, we always talk about how the evaluation process is a continuum. You know, for personnel departments, it starts all the way back in summer, goes all the way to April. A couple of opportunities that maybe you could have coached him, be it in Mobile at the Senior Bowl a couple weeks ago. Presumably, he's not going to be working out here. Any disappointment that you're not going to get that chance to evaluate Joe Burrow as a player by you coaching him or seeing him here in Indy?
No, I think those LSU guys in general had a unique timeline in that they finished in the middle of January. They really played almost an NFL season to an extent. So we'll just use the opportunities we get, and we know that we'll get a chance to see these guys at pro days and individual workouts. And, again, we don't have to make a decision until late April, so we'll utilize all the tools we get.
Zach, how about A.J. Green? He's been a long-time Cincinnati Bengal. Yeah. He's going to be a free agent. What are your thoughts on him?
he's going to be a Bengal. We want him to be a Bengal. He's an important piece of what we want to do. And, again, that process is still working itself out over the course of the spring. But I want A.J. Green to be a part of what we're doing on offense. And he's certainly been a huge asset for the team and been a great role model in the community for a long time, and think very highly of A.J.
You know, a different scenario, but I'll ask the same question with regards to Andy Dalton, who's also been a Bengal for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, Andy's done great things for us, and that's a great position to be in right now because we have a really good starting quarterback. And so that helps us as we go through this process. We know we have an Andy. Andy and I have a great relationship. He's got a good relationship with the staff. He's been a tremendous leader for this team. And so we just want to be up front with him throughout this whole process, every step of the way. And ultimately, we have to do what's best for the Cincinnati Bengals. But he's certainly earned our respect, and we want to make sure that we can communicate with him and help him as best we can.
So will he be back like A.J. Green?
It's hard to say right now. You know, I think every situation is a little bit unique, and that's something we'll work through really starting this week at the Combine and as we get going through free agency.
Now, forget the media because that's one animal, but because you're on the clock and you're the team that will pick first in every round, how many questions are you getting from teachers, neighbors, everybody you see, how many questions do they have about
pizza
that pick?
Delivery is
usually
a big one.
Pizza delivery, I can see that.
You know, it's my 9-year-old son I really got to watch out for because he's the one who hears everything I say and who you talk to.
And that will be
used
against
you. He's our next
source, by the way. We had to have a lot of one-on-one talks with Brooks and make sure we're on the same page there.
All right, fair enough. We wish you the best of luck. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
So let's look at some of the other top stories or things that got our attention today. GM Dave Gettleman with the New York Giants said his team is absolutely open for business at pick number 4. Adam, what say you?
Well, it makes sense here, but the real question is what Detroit is going to do at 3, and where is there a landing spot for a team that wants to try to trade up for a quarterback? That's always going to be the question. There's no reason for the Giants not to be open at 4. The trick is, the challenge is you don't want to fall back too far and put yourself out of range for an offensive tackle prospect to perhaps protect Daniel Jones here going forward.
Yeah, I think you're looking at a football team that historically has kind of stood pat and just picked at their selection. And this is a team that has multiple needs on all three levels of the defense, needs that they could still use weaponry on the perimeter on offense, can still maybe fortify an offensive line. I mean, absolutely, he should be open for business.
And it's also interesting to note that he's never traded back
right
in a draft ever, Dave Gettleman as a GM.
I think they're in the sweet spot because they could go back a few spots. You mentioned earlier, Lewis, Derek Brown. There's Derek Brown, Javon Kinlaw, Isaiah Simmons. I think they can move back and get a blue-chip defensive player.
All right, Raiders GM Mike Mayock said he's happy with Derek Carr, the team's quarterback, but also said he's going to evaluate every position every year, and if they can get better, they will. Should the Raiders shop for a quarterback, Lewis?
Yeah, look, I'll tell you, if they're being objective about this and they really do believe that maybe they need someone with a little bit more upside at the quarterback position and someone who maybe can take this team to another level, then absolutely they should shop for another quarterback. I mean, it's well within their right to do that. No one says that they have to stay married to Derek Carr, and no one says that they have to continue to beat their head against the wall if they feel as though that's what they're doing. So sure, be objective about it, evaluate it objectively, and see if it leads you to a different conclusion.
All right, Bucs head coach Bruce Arians says his team has made no decision on a Jameis Winston franchise tag. They still want to see the available quarterbacks during the offseason. What's the best fit there, Mike?
Oh, no question about it. It's Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater was 5-0 as a starter this year, 22-12 in his career. People don't realize how talented that Tampa Bay defense was. It was a top-10 defense the second half of the season. Todd Bowles did a great job. If you pair him with someone like Teddy Bridgewater that won't lose the game the way Jameis Winston lost some of the games, Tampa Bay could quickly turn their fortunes around.
All right, and another quarterback news. Bears GM Ryan Pace reaffirmed the team's commitment to starting quarterback Mitchell Trubisky in 2020. Lou, do you share that commitment to a guy you've called Maserati Mitch?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was as big of a fan of Mitch as anyone, but I do think they absolutely need to bring in someone to at least push Mitch. I don't think you can let him go into this offseason comfortable. I think knowing Matt Nagy the way I do, he's going to want to do that, and it would behoove them to do that.
Well, what was interesting here is that he declined to address the fifth-year option and said they had until May to determine whether or not to pick up that fifth-year option in Mr. Trubisky's contract.
Guys, if we were drafting quarterbacks in the NFC North, he would clearly be 4 between Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, and a rejuvenated Kirk Cousins. There's no way they should exercise that option if I'm the Chicago Bears.
All right. Meanwhile, in Carolina, Panthers quarterback Cam Newton's health and his future remains in question as we approach the new season. Newton, coming off a foot surgery in December, is set to enter the final year of his deal in 2020. Here's Matt Rhule.
I'm unbelievably excited to get a chance to work with Cam. I'll just say that I really want him on the team, and I really want him to be healthy. And I know when Cam's healthy, who he is and the type of player that he is. And so to me, it's just about, hey, are we doing all the things to get him healthy? When Cam's healthy, he's, you know, one of the best of the best.
All right, Mike, expectation is that Matt Rhule will work with Cam Newton ultimately?
The Carolina Panthers should take a page out of the Cleveland Cavaliers playbook and learn. John Beilein came in there with all this hype. He couldn't make it through half the year. Job one in 2020 Carolina is to establish Matt Rhule as an NFL head coach. Nobody could do that better than Cam Newton. When Cam Newton's healthy, he took that team to the Super Bowl. That is hard to do. They have a good quarterback there. They have to get Matt Rhule established. And I'm sure if the Cavaliers could do it all over again, they either go with John Beilein and a more experienced team or go with a young coach.
Joe Brady comes over from LSU. A good fit with Cam Newton?
Yeah, it remains to be seen. And look, Joe understands what it means to work within an NFL environment, considering the fact that he's already been there. I think what would be one of the best things for Carolina they could do is let Matt Rhule and Cam Newton just organically let that relationship kind of build however it's going to build. And look, as much as you love David Tepper and you love the fact that this is a guy who's bringing new life into the NFL, just let the head coach handle it.
Yeah. Well, and again, they're in a spot here where to get up to draft one of the quarterbacks they really like, the cost might be too prohibitive. They're already behind the Bengals. They're behind the Dolphins. They're behind the Chargers. So why not rebuild the defense and begin to establish the culture that Matt Rhule wants to implement before you go make a big move at quarterback?
And Matt Rhule has such a long-term contract. Is they could build it, tear it down, build it back up. Yeah. There's not a sense of urgency this year. But what's important is that he has to establish himself as a bona fide NFL head coach. That's job number one.
Oh, Wendy, we want to repeat the big story going into tonight.
What's that?
The NFL PA Executive Board meeting with NFL owners to see if they can reach resolution on the collective bargaining agreement that's on the table. The big objection is the players not wanting to play 17 regular season games. We'll see how they wind this up tonight.
Listen, that meeting tonight at 5 o'clock Eastern, there will be a lot to say about that. Matt Rhule, who we just talked about, as well as Mike McCarthy, both scheduled to join us here on NFL Live tomorrow from Indianapolis. We're here all week. The Jump is next.